happy to be here and glad to see everyone as well. So for those of you that got my email about this workshop today, fantastic, because I never know if it's going to actually get to the person or end up in spam. As since we at least have one or two emails in our inbox that we have never gotten to, and it's just the nature of the world. And thank you. For me, to be here today has been a real honor. And of course, who has not seen the monks walking across the America in the last couple months? It has just been amazing. And people have asked me, well, why don't you wear the robes? Why don't you shave your head? And I said, well, it's a funny thing. How many people here are Catholic? Anyone Catholic? Okay, anybody Protestant? Just choose a Christian subsect. Let's see, what are we, Lutherans, okay. Let's see, who else? Then we have the guys with the snakes and the Bible and everything. Then we have, born again. Then we have, let me just say, I've lost count of how many different sects or subsets of Christianity there is. And the great irony is, Christ was not a Christian. You know, think about that. When Muhammad got started, he was not a Muslim, didn't exist. And of course, Buddha was not a Buddhist when he got started. So in the world of Buddhism, like Christianity, like every other, even in Judaism, you have the observant Jews and you have the Anasazi, and everybody has that little bit sliced in the pie. And so my slice is Hamni Buddhism. And then we have Tibetan Buddhism, which we think of the Dalai Lama. That's Tibetan Buddhism. Then we have Tibetan via China versus India, Chinese Buddhism. And then we also have Japanese Buddhism and even subsets of Vietnamese Buddhism. So taking the countries out of it and where people are born, we have all these filters coming down to us through thousands of years of education and masters and disciples and masters and disciples. And for myself, I was fortunate enough to meet Master Yu back in 99, 2000. And I'd gone for a walk on a very sunny spring day, feeling a little bit lost. I was 43 or 44 at the time. And I was kind of hoping for that burning bush, you know? Anybody ever go looking for a burning bush? Yeah, usually you find it, something's on fire that, you know, there's no voice coming out of it. And so I came back to the house, and my friend Douglas, who had already met Master Yu and been taking classes, the first thing that, as I walked in the door, and he's as tall as I am, so we're like, you know, like bookends, the two tallest Buddhists you'll ever meet. And he said, hey, you want to meet Master Yu? And I said, okay, perfect timing, because he had asked me before, but it was like this time it clicked. So we got in the car, we drove off to the temple, and it was a room not much bigger than this, in an industrial setting. So it was trucks and machines going and all the stuff around the area. This one place had a million tires stacked up to be distributed. Another place were pounding steel and hammering and welding. Very un-Buddhist temple-ish, let me just say. If you've seen the Buddhist temple that the individual came from in Texas, that is what people think of the big Buddhist temple. Well, in this work of Hamni Buddhism, of which Master Yu was the 49th lineage holder. So think of him being the 49th Dalai Lama of this particular sect of Buddhism. And I thought, wow, this is different. So I walked in the doors, took my shoes off, and then we entered the main hall. And up on the, well, I can't say podium, but there's a stand way up high. And there's these five golden Buddha statues. And I looked at that and I go, wow. But it wasn't what I saw. It's what I felt. And for the first time, those Buddha statues felt alive. They were vibrating to me. It's like, holy moly. And that got my attention. And then I sat through, which was basically a Buddhist service and teaching. And that Douglas turned and said, well, do you need a healing? I said, oh yeah, I could always use a healing. I had some issues at the time. And they said, oh, just fill out this paperwork because I have to do it by the book. And I said, okay, and now sit in the middle here. And there were 40 or 50 practitioners in the Buddhist robes with their beads like this. And I'm sitting there by myself, I think maybe one other person. And it's a cool afternoon because it is a industrial building, so they neither heated it in the winter nor cooled it in the summer. So you got what you got. And I was a little bit cold, not expecting to be in a cold building. Otherwise, I would have brought some more layers because you can see I'm so heavy that, I don't easily do well with cold, but heat I can stand pretty well. So I'm sitting in the middle, wearing my black sweatshirt, and all of a sudden everybody starts chanting, and Master Yu's up at the main chair in the dais, and they're all chanting Medicine Buddha. Om Namo Bhagavate, Bachaze, Guabayuya, Burabhazaya, Dagadadaya, Ahade, Samyasum, Daya, Dag, Om, Bachaze, Bachaze, Maha, Bachaze, Rosa, Samagade, Soha. And now 50 of these guys are chanting. And I'm sitting here, and that's nice. And I couldn't repeat the words to save my life if I wanted to, because this is the first time I'd ever heard it. And they're chanting away and chanting away. And all of a sudden I notice it's like, oh, I'm not cold anymore. And they're chanting and chanting and chanting. It's like, oh, what is that? Oh, my God, I'm sweating. They're chanting and chanting. And I'm just dripping with sweat. In this room, it's probably 58 or 59 degrees. It's cold, and I'm just sweating. And after it was all done, I was like, holy moly. And I asked Douglas, what just happened? They said, well, they were burning off karma. I go, really? Anybody not familiar with karma? It's the idea of your life teachings. It's like why you incarnated at this time into this body is to learn from past lessons. So the idea of doing Medicine Buddha as a practice, which I do for other people, it's part of what I do quietly in the background sometimes in a group of people, and as well as distance healing and personal healing. Later today, if anybody has an ache or a pain or something they'd like me to work on, I'll be happy to. So as they're all chanting Medicine Buddha, it's like I'm having this real visceral experience that I was not expecting. I couldn't have made myself sweat like that if I'd run a marathon. I just don't sweat that much. And it was the first time in my life I'd been in anything resembling a religious service, but I will call it a spiritual service because it was not religion at all. It's a practice. And that technically, yes, I could teach every one of you in the room what I know to all ends, and you could do what I do, but it does take time and dedication. And that's one of the things I aspire to do, and I'm still working on it some 25 years on. So that got my undivided attention. And so shortly thereafter, I took refuge with Master Yu and began taking his classes and the teachings. And it was probably the best investment I'd ever done because here I am all these years later, still practicing and helping heal people. My wife's family has her brother-in-law is in the hospital, so I've been praying over him. My wife was having an ache or pain, so I worked on her, and that's gone. Another woman in a wheelchair a couple weeks ago, her leg would go like this when she was sitting, so I prayed over her and it stopped. And to me, that was the most wonderful experience to see the work is really working. Now, I know most people with a Christian denomination, she says, Dear Jesus, help me, help me, help me. And I realized for some, that is the answer. For myself, having had connections to Christ, in my life, it's been phenomenal, but I haven't found that direct action. Still a bit of a mystery. For example, when I was 19, dating a young gal who is a devout Christian, she'd be going to church every week, Bible study and all this. So she had years of experience in praying and doing all that she did. And I think that's kind of the keynote here is about devotion, practice, continue repeatedly. To where you own it, you feel it. As they say, if you get your 10,000 hours in, you become a master of whatever you're doing. So I was having a really bad migraine headache. And I mean, I was just in pain. I was rolling back and forth in my bed. And she just knelt down next to me at the bed. And then I found myself saying, and this is at the age of 19, it's like, Jesus Christ, if your love can prevent this, show me. migraine went away. I had a demonstration of the faith of Christ with this girl praying at my side. I did not ask Jesus Christ, can you heal this forever? Two different questions. I got my answer. I got my experience. But it still was like a part of me was like, wow, that was kind of cool. But then a migraine came back. So it kind of, it's like, okay, be careful and be clear for what you ask. Because it could have been like, well, could I win $1 million? That would have been cool. But at the same time, to have that pain relieved from my body was genuinely a minor miracle, which was part of my journey and experiencing something greater than myself. Part of my life journey ended up in 12-step programs, you know, with the issue of family alcoholism and the big book and all these different things. And years later, I ended up working in a drug rehab unit. So it was like feet on the ground experience, working with people and helping them find their answer, which is ultimately what Buddhism is about, is to end suffering. It's not about pontificating. In the monk's walk, they would simply say, may you have peace. They never said, you're going to be this, or you're going to hell, or any of these other things. It's like not saying what your life should be. It's just like, may you have peace. And that's why I have found it an amazing opportunity of growth, because it's not about my way or the highway. It's about connecting to yourself, connecting to God. And it is a practice. It is a practice to park a very big car that's driving down the driveway right now. I think they'll make it okay. Yeah, the big car, big truck going by. They're fine. Yep. Just taking a moment. So, in the world of religious science, or Christian science rather, Ernest Holmes said, there is good in the universe, and you should have it. And there is truth in your soul, and you shall find it. And find it this day. So Holmes, he studied Zoroastrianism, which also talks about death and resurrection after 3 days of Zoroaster. Catholicism, he studied Judaism. And, of course, one of the oldest religions in existence is Buddhism. I think it's maybe only superseded by Judaism, but it's six of one, half dozen of another. So in Buddhism, as a practice, there are considered the four immeasurables, the things that have no measure, and yet they're a place to work towards, go towards, to experience. And these are basically the following. I will say it in the Tibetan first, and then I'll bring it back. That's Namo Gurave, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Samaya, Namo Sanjaya. Namo Gurave, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Samaya, Namo Sanjaya. And Namo is like saying the one. And you're asking for the one to help me create this space of immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable joy, and immeasurable equanimity. And what is equanimity? It means to treat everyone the same. King or pauper or stranger or friend. To get to that place on the journey of life, on the path, to simply be present to another person. And that's what I think the monks demonstrated so well. As they were walking, I know that they have their chant. I'm still trying to learn that one, because when they're chanting without seeing it on paper in an English format, it's hard for me to click it in. It's kind of like a dyslexia. And that's why I practice, practice, practice with mantras where we work. So how this comes back to immeasurable love is metta, immeasurable compassion is karuna, immeasurable joy is mudita, and immeasurable equanimity is upekkha. So there is long versions of this, but again, I'm just giving the synopsis because we don't have a huge time today, but I will get into this so that everybody has an understanding. So may all sentient beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. Not just, you know, have some ice cream and feel good, but that deep down place of happiness, what really brings our light to life. Like the song, There Is Only Love. I mean, that's it. That's the universe. That's it in a nutshell. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. This is a measureless compassion, karuna. And in my work, which has been so much the physical, helping people heal physical issues, and coming from a nursing background, this supplement, this pill, this potion, this practice has been great. But I'm transitioning now into more of spiritual healing and spiritual wellness. And so often I'll be working with someone who had forgotten an issue in their life, and yet that's the key issue. For example, I was doing a Zoom call. I was on about 30 people. And I was just talking about medical intuition, all that. And my friend Katie, who is the host, said, "Justin, could you do a reading on someone in the group?" And it's like, okay, you know, like kind of shoot from the hip here. And it's like, okay. And she said, "This is my friend Amy," and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, not her real name. And I said, "Okay, Amy, would you like me to do a read for you at this time in front of all these people, because it will be very public?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, sure." And the next words out of my mouth is, "So, tell me what happened to you at the age of 14. And she just started crying. Started crying. And we had never met, we never talked. And I said, "Are you okay to talk about this?" She says, "Yeah, that was the first time I was abused at the age of 14. So there was no pre-app or talking about or to getting to the point or talking about life. But that intuitively, I just knew at that age, this is when things happened. Over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, this is becoming very prominent in my work. And that just helps me cut through all the junk. We go right to the pain, the suffering. And that's where I get to do what I do best." As I get goosebumps saying this, is that I get to bring the energy of the Buddha, the light of the world, the energy of the grace to that person. And I help them clear it. I've worked with people that have been through, you know, psychology, psychiatry. They've been through all the stuff. They've gone to all the seminars. But they haven't healed the primal pain, the suffering. And to see someone shift within minutes, not months, to me is just a great honor that I do as part of the sessions when I'm working directly with someone. May all sentient beings never be disassociated from the supreme happiness, which is without suffering. This is the measureless joy, mudita. And that is what I think the monks who were walking were demonstrating, that measureless joy. They were walking in heat and rain and cold and barefoot. Get out of town. When I was watching those guys after 2,000 miles walking barefoot, it's like, man, I want whatever they're drinking. Because they were doing it one step at a time. And as they were walking, people would burst into tears. And to me, that is a recognition of chanting not once or twice for a few days, but for years, and the practice and the practice and the practice. Because that's one of the aspects of chanting, that it helps us center and get connected. Now, everyone here probably knows this familiar chant, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done." Well, that's actually an English version of the Aramaic. If we would really like to learn something that is very powerful, and there's a bunch of them on YouTube, I would have you learn to speak the Lord's Prayer in the original language, Aramaic. Much like the chant that I did for Medicine Buddha, that's the original Tibetan. Maybe a little bit of Chinese thrown in, but it's primarily Tibetan Sanskrit language. So when I'm speaking this language, it is as it was originally written, carved in stone, if you will, thousands of years ago. And the fourth, may all sentient beings remain in boundless equanimity, free from both attachment to close ones and rejection of others. This is the measureless equanimity of renouncing upekkha. Again, it is to see someone on the street, might be covered in rags, might be a billionaire, a gazillionaire, and anyone in between. And to recognize them for who they are as a child of God, and to try and step back from prejudices or belief sets because of the way they're dressed, because of their attitude, and they may be really funky, and they may have some seriously negative energy. But the idea is just to accept them as they are, because since I was born, I haven't lived in a vacuum. I don't think anyone else has. Meaning that everything that's happened to us, like in fourth grade or third grade, when you got left outside and you had to go, you know, you did something wrong, you had to go to the principal's office, or you didn't get picked for the softball team the first go round, or, you know, the girls were being snotty and you were not part of the clique, or whatever it was. And then, of course, family of origin issues, and also parents of family of origin issues, grandparents of family of origin issues, and back and back and back. And so it has been said that, you know, we carry with us 7 generations. And going back, that's like 150, 160 years. And that's just the first 7 generations. But technically, everyone in this room, if we could go back to an Adam or Eve, we would find at some point that we are most likely distant cousins. And since 23andMe has showed up and the other DNA things, people do find distant cousins. So truly, we are all connected. And the strange thing is, it's like, yes, there is karma, there is dharma, there is ways to acknowledge who we are. And yet, all of the things that happen are not to happen to us, but to happen through us. Is that, what is the lesson here? My lesson today, sitting here while Bill was talking, I flashbacked all the way to, I had to be up for school at 4 a.m. My class started at 5:30, and I always wanted to be there on time. And so I felt myself trying to get to sleep last night. Oh, I got to be up and all this stuff. And anytime I set the alarm, it could be for noon, but I'll start like going into this kind of minor panic mode. And it's been that way for many years. So I started at finally about 6 a.m. when I finally got to sleep, I started tapping using EFT techniques. And it's like, I just felt like, resolve. Okay, why didn't I think of that earlier? So my bottom line is whatever works for you, whatever path you are on is your path. You know, I could put a pile of gold over here, and some of you might want to partake of it, or you might want to just pass it by, because there's always pitfalls and possibilities for every choice we make. Or if we put lots and lots of clothes over here, would you want to put some on? No. Kind of warm in here right now, which is really nice. So on the journey, on the place, on the way that we are all going, we all know where we started. We all know where we're going to end. And there's not one thing that you've ever held or seen or thought of that you can take with you except your memories. When we transition, when we shift from this world to another, whatever that is, again, we don't even take the clothes on us in the casket or the ashes from the crematorium. We are it, our spirit, our light, our energy. And again, there really is only love. That to think that sometimes love can be a bad thing when someone loves or covets something that belongs to someone else and causes all kinds of mischief. We've seen down through history how kings want to conquer things because they feel divine right, and that's just made a mess of things. And yet we also see where the house is on fire and the father, the mother, runs back into the house and pulls out the child or pulls out the dog or something like that. Or there's an abandoned dog on the side of the street. And someone takes them in and heals them, and of which there's so many videos on YouTube, I'm still bawling my eyes out. I also recently lost a forever puppy, our dog Otis, who'd been with us for 14 years. And I've had like 7 or 8 dogs in my life, but I'd never had one in my life this long every day. And my wife is grieving, I've been grieving. And it's been an honor and a blessing to have him. One day we're in the car together, he barked, prevented me going in an intersection. And had I gone to the intersection, I would have been killed by the truck that went through the intersection. Or if I hadn't been killed, it probably most likely would have been a quadriplegic. It would have been terrible. It was a, you know, 10-ton trash truck going at speed against the red light. But he barked, he stopped me from going in there, and we lived to tell the tale. And he, in his own way, always had a feeling that it was like a cat in a former life, because he always seemed to have 9 lives. He survived being bitten by a coyote. He survived running across a major boulevard with traffic and other things that happened. So again, he was a little Buddha. He was also the dog police that if my wife and I ever got in a heated discussion, he'd come right in between us and start barking at both of us from the other room. Some crazy things. So what I'm saying is, wherever you find a teacher, wherever you find a lesson that you can learn, by all means, I suggest listening and experiencing it. And that is why I am real excited about the class today. Hopefully a few more people will show up at 1 o'clock. And if no one does, that's fine too. I did bring extra incense. I brought some of my ghost shield powder, which has been blessed, where you put around your home and it pushes out all the negative energy. Also have a couple CDs and some water and a few other things. So, again, it's my great honor to be here today. But before I step down, I would like everybody to consider the following. Is that
when the monks are walking, is that mantra that is working, and they're following that energy and movement. And I'm just going to imagine now I'm walking like 2,000 miles, and I could be thinking, there is only love, there is only love, there is only love. Or I could be thinking, Namo Gurudeva, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Samaya, Namo Sanjaya. Or I can be thinking, Om Mani Padme Hum. And if I was walking in the east, it would be Om Mani Padme Hum, which is basically the six directions of the universe. The universe, myself, Compassion Brothers, and all these condensed into that. So when you're out on the road later today, or walking even in the rain, which is not that bad, think about just as you're going down the road, maybe perhaps this is my peaceful day. This is my peaceful day. Or it could be, this is my peaceable day. Or this day there is peace. And just see how that feels. Just take a moment with that. Just take a moment with it. And just allow yourself, take that breath in, breathe it in, and hold on to the consciousness of peace. And let it go.
Taking another breath of peace without end and out beginning. And let it go. And now as you take in that breath of peace, bring it in from the divine, bring it in from the infinite to you, to your heart, filled with compassion. Breathe in, breathe in, breathe in. And hold it, acknowledge it, and then release it back to life. And so it is. Thank you all so very much.